Yes. It's amazing how it works. But we are back.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, almost there. Trying to remember how to work all this equipment. Let's see. There we go. We got that better. Radio Fishing back on the air. This is Fish and Frank, and in the chair across from me is Robert, the one and only walking encyclopedia, Wikipedia person.
I don't know about that.
Well, it doesn't matter what you know. It matters what I know.
Oh, okay.
I am the boss. I'm Omni.
Almighty Guru Frank.
Yes, the man, the myth, the walk-around living legend guy. I get to decide this stuff. All right, and the intro's over, and we're back. We're going to start back. Obviously, the first one needs to be a fishing report. Just to give you an idea, we do have some stuff. We are going to be doing regular shows with FWC. We've got set up with CETO to do some spots with them, and a whole host of other captains and gurus and fishing people. But we are back. Goal is to have a regular scheduled programming again. Let's see. All the IRS, the audits are gone. I got my paperwork back.
Which is perfect.
Yeah, I just got it back last night, so I think that's...
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, last night I got paperwork back from
nice.
Them. I think we have a clean bill of health finally. I don't know what the final tally is going to be. Got the Department of Revenue stuff fixed. We've got the help fixed in the store. We've got plenty of help now. We've got... I think everything's going to go horribly, horribly wrong at this point. Everything's, you know, it gets this good.
It's the weather.
Yeah, it gets...
The weather is making it worse. Everything else is perfect.
Well, you know, yeah, we're losing
this
money.
This El Nino pattern is going to wreck us.
Yeah, we're losing money every day. I mean, I'm going in the hole. It's been 3 weeks since I've had a paycheck, but...
Everything else looks good, and then the weather turns to crap.
You know, I forgot. It's already bad. Now I don't have anything to worry
See?
About.
It's yeah, perfect.
I was worried that, you know, man, things are going too good. I guess, you know, I promised myself no more ranting, no more complaining. Life's good. And we have some... this year is going to bring a lot of changes to a lot of stuff. El Nino, probably the biggest thing going on. I think the Peace River is up at like 10 or 12 feet now, and I've seen that in July, August, during
right.
storm surge time, you know, when we have, you know, like tropical storms going over us and everything. But I don't believe, this is the first January I can remember where we have that much water. It's down to 7 feet on its way back up.
Sunday it was at 9.5 feet.
It
and
was
last week it was 10 or something like
January
that.
January 20th it was 10.5. The 21st still 10.5. The 22nd down to 10. 23rd down to 9. You can get all this information right on fishandfranks.com. Now, the reason we're kind of talking about this is that's a lot of fresh water running into the harbor. Huge amounts of fresh water. I forget how many cubic feet a second, but billions of gallons of fresh water coming into the harbor. And when you look at the top of the harbor, you got the Myakka River right at the top, which is at flood stage. The Peace River was just below flood stages. And the Peace River kind of comes in. We got the Myakka River right at the top. And then the Peace River kind of coming in. Let's say the harbor runs north and south. So the Peace River is on the northeast corner. And the Myakka River is at the north end of it, on the northwest side. And it blows straight down that west side of the harbor. And the Peace River comes in. And the mouth of the Peace River actually points right at the west side of the harbor.
Right.
And so you've got both those big freshwater funnels coming out. And every outgoing tide rolls right down that west side. And then on the incoming tide, comes in out of Boca, Gasparilla, well, you start Little Gasparilla Pass,
Little
Boca Grande, Captiva, Redfish, and Ponderosa, right?
Yes.
Because Ponderosa, Redfish, Captiva, Boca, and there's a little cut in there somewhere, too.
Blind Pass or whatever
it is. Yeah, whatever that is. So, but the reason to remember all of the passes is all of them are on the southern part of the harbor, right, excluding Little Gasparilla Pass. But that water's coming in, but it only a portion of that goes up the intercoastal waterway, because the Little Gasparilla Pass and Stump Pass both bring water in and out. But that's more of an intercoastal thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't, it's not really coming, it comes into the harbor a bit. But Boca Grande, Captiva, Redfish, and Ponarasa all bring in water on the south end of the harbor. So that salt water is not going to come into Boca Grande Pass and go south, because Captiva, Redfish, and Ponarasa are pushing the water in as well. So the water that comes in from Boca Grande is comes in, goes straight across towards Burnt Store Marina and the Pirate Harbor area, and then pushes north along the east side. And then if the tide is long enough, say we have an 8-hour tide, it won't do anything like a 4-hour tide, but on an 8-hour tide, it would go up all the way to Alligator Creek, hit Punta Gorda, and then is deflected back over towards the Myakka River. You know, it's you can just take your finger on a chart, or even bring up Google, Google Maps or one of them, and you can see where the water would come up. When you look at it, look at the bottom and see where the water comes in at Ponarasa, then the water comes in at Redfish Pass, the water comes in at Captiva, and the water comes in at Boca. It gives you an idea how that water's pushed into the harbor and then funneled up the east side and then across over towards the Myakka River.
Right.
And then on the outgoing tide, you can see how the water's pulled out of the Peace River and Punta Gorda, which Punta Gorda means wide point in Spanish. And that big wide point of Punta Gorda is what focuses the Peace River water over towards the west side. So you can see how this water moves and affects. And we're going through almost a summertime pattern where the west side of the harbor is very fresh. The east side, every time we get an incoming tide, goes very salty. The water on the east side, is it can go from clear to murky, clear to murky. The water on the west side is just staying brown and murky.
Right.
It doesn't get that cool, clean water coming in out of the Gulf. Now, the problem that we're having is in the summertime, we look for the cooler, cleaner water to come in from the Gulf, because the waters that are coming down the river is really hot. It's brown, it's fresh, it's very non-conducive for fish to live in.
Right.
Hot water means low oxygen, fresh means a little more uncomfortable.
Less forage foods, too.
Right. It's basically knocking back a lot of the small stuff. It doesn't really affect the bigger fish.
No. Most of our saltwater fish have a fairly high tolerance for the fresh water, but a lot of their food sources don't. The little shrimp, the little snails, the little crabs, you know, some of those species that we take for granted every day can't tolerate the fresh water nearly as much. Some of the species can, but when you take away 50% of their forage food, there's a lot less food available for them to chew on. So you can't breathe and you can't eat. What do you want to stick around for?
Right. If I go into a grocery store and they don't have half of what I want, then, you know, I'm going to go to the next grocery store.
Right.
It's that simple. If you go in and, you know, you want this, this, and this, and they only got that, you're going to go somewhere else to find the other this and this. You know, well, you got that, but you're still looking for this and this. So it's the same thing with the fish. They hang around because the initial burst of big water brings an immense amount of food.
Yes.
All that small stuff, the little fish, the crustaceans and stuff, all get swept up with that heavy flood current coming down the rivers. And mm-hmm. so it washes freshwater fish, crawdads, you know, unimaginable amounts of food come rushing down those rivers with that flood. Just like if, you know, picture some idiot drove their car into the water and then just gets washed down. It's the same thing with the bait.
Just watch the news on a regular basis. You'll see floods. You'll see houses and everything else.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens. It washes all that food down. But the longer it flows, the less it comes down.
Correct.
And then the more it kills the stuff that's supposed to be living in the salt water.
Right.
So it starts out bringing a tremendous amount of extra food in, then actually ends up, if it lasts long enough like this is, where it decreases the amount of availability of food.
Mm-hmm.
So when it first starts, all the fish run up into it, and we saw that with the trout and redfish and everything else. But the longer this lasts, if it goes on another week, it's going to start decreasing the fish.
Correct. Yeah, Danny was even saying yesterday that he's seen some redfish that he's pretty convinced are coming out of the Peace River. It's his first little group of redfish he's caught in like a week, and he said they were very, very stained looking, and he's pretty convinced that some of those were fish that just boogied out of the river because of whatever, no food or temperature. He's not sure, but he said the coloration of them just looked like typical river fish.
Yeah, so it kind of fits along with exactly what we're thinking.
Exactly, yeah.
So we've got partial confirmation. Danny Latham, he's a captain here in Charlotte Harbor, probably one of the best fishermen alive. I would have to say he's just literally an amazing captain. I've known Danny since he was 12 years old. Yes, we all know I'm the old man of the bunch. Working in the store, Danny came in as a little kid. I was talking to Rhett the other day, and Rhett's been coming in, I think, since he was 8 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of these captains that were out there grew up and were raised coming into fishing franks, and I'm exceptionally happy they still do. I mean, we got some great guys around here. But what happens is, I'm just kind of giving you a background on Danny, because with Danny, he grew up fishing here. He knows the fish. He knows the redfish. He knows most of them by their first name. And when Danny tells you about something like that, I tend to believe it more. If it was, you know, a captain who's only been around 5 or 10 years, that's not really...
Well, and he's a little bit of an exception to the rule. There's guys that are good fishermen. There's guys that are good personality-wise. Danny likes to eat, sleep, and breathe fish. You know, he doesn't want to just look at the fish in this area. He wants to try to understand why they're in that area and what maybe they're going to do tomorrow if they're going to move, and why they came and where they came from to be in that area. You know, he's always very much analyzing and trying to remember.
It's the only way you're going to be consistent catching fish. Mm-hmm. The more you understand the fish you're chasing, the more likely you know where they're going to go as the conditions change.
Right.
And if you don't understand how the fish eat, live, sleep, breathe, that's why we're kind of going on to this as we get in the fishing report, because obviously there's not going to be that much of a fishing report. I
mean, trout, I mean, sheep's head.
Yeah. Okay, we got this one here and that one there. All right. This is, but, you know, I'm just telling you, this is critical. Critical, you know, Bert Gomer on Tremors is just said it best. I feel I've been denied critical need to know information.
Right.
And that's what we don't want you to go through. We want you to have that critical need to know information, and understanding that we have a massive freshwater influx right now that is absolutely unheard of for this time of year.
Right.
I mean, it's for me a little over 31 years, and probably I would say for 28 of that, I've been aware of the weather patterns and changes and stuff like that. The first couple of years you're in the store, you're still kind of like, I remember trying to figure out where the drag was in a reel. Guy says, you know, I told the guy, I says, from everything I know, this has got a really great drag. He said, well, where is it? And I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I have no idea. Where's the drags on a reel? You know, and he left. And part of the reason I'm good at my job is because I get embarrassed so easily. Like, if I don't know the answer, it's pretty embarrassing. So, I mean, I literally
started tearing apart.
I disassembled that thing and asked a lot of questions from people who knew better. And old Alan Ogle at Bill's Tackle, I went in there and had him show me what was good and what was bad, because Alan Ogle, his wife's Kathy, her father Bill, had started that tackle shop years and years before that, and we sold bait, they did reel repair. It was a great symbiotic relationship with Bill's Tackle downtown. And so I had Alan, you know, I went over with him and said, you know, you got to teach me this, I'm stupid, this is killing me. So anyway, but back to where we're at, as the freshwater comes in from the Gulf now, we're experiencing something that's almost unheard of and unknown, and I can't tell you what it's going to do. When I fish in the summer, I want an incoming tide.
Yes, definitely.
Now, the reason for that is the water in the Gulf is clearer, so it does not absorb the solar radiation. In other words, does not get as hot. as the brown, murky water coming down the rivers, full of silt, it's dark colored, acts as a solar collector. And most of the river bottoms now are silt and mud, so they don't reflect the heat back up, they absorb the heat. Well, hot water is very low oxygen. So in the summertime, you get that big incoming tide, the water's cooler, it's saltier, and the fishing goes crazy. My normal thing in the winter is, when it's this cold out, is I want an outgoing tide.
Right.
I want, in the summer, the last half of the incoming tide. In the winter, I like fishing the last half of the outgoing tide. The reason being, we have a lot of little tidal pools, creeks, canals, a lot of places for when that water gets up in there in the winter, the bright sunshine, brown water back in those little areas, there's nice and stained water, and the bottoms are black, absorbs a tremendous amount of solar radiation, and heats up way faster than the harbor. I mean, in a few hours, that water will get warm, and which would take a volcano in the Gulf to heat it that quickly.
Right.
So as that water gets all warm in the morning, and then you get that afternoon outgoing tide, as that tide goes out, they get all that warm water from the creeks and the tidal ponds and the canals. All that water is several degrees warmer. It's not enough to affect, let's say, the fish itself, but it is way more than enough to affect the food of the fish, the shrimp, the little crabs, and all that. That few degree water change.
I'll agree and disagree a little bit with that.
Okay. Now, what did I get wrong?
Well, you said it won't affect the fish that much, and actually it kind of does, because what people forget is that fish are cold-blooded. They're just like a snake or a frog or a turtle, whatever you want to relate it to. And this time of year, or like anything with cold-blooded animals, they digest their food from fermentation. They need the heat to digest their food properly.
I told you he was Wikipedia on a stick. I mean, he comes in and he's doing, they digest from fermentation. So now, it sounds like they're making freaking wine in their belly. Yeah, I'm sorry.
And they kind of are. It goes two ways. One, only a couple degrees can make a huge difference whether they're going to digest that food faster or if it's going to sit in their stomach and rot.
Ooh.
You know, because if they can't...
I didn't get the whole rot thing, because if it sits in there too long without being digested, it can literally cause almost a food poisoning effect.
Yes, absolutely. And that plays into another thing of why smaller baits tend to work better in the wintertime than larger baits, because they'd rather have a smaller meal because they can digest it faster. When you have these stupid cold fronts and temperature drops, they would prefer those smaller meals just to sustain life.
Right, because if they put too much in their belly, they take the chance on it rotting them, getting sick.
Right.
And it's kind of like after Thanksgiving. I forgot what it was like to overeat, because with my diabetes and the stuff in my brain and all the rest of that stuff going on, I have to be very careful about what I eat most of the
right.
time. And after a big meal, I mean, I really feel bad nowadays. I mean, yeah. It's just after Thanksgiving, I thought I was going to die that night. It was like, God, I ate too much.
But it only takes that literally 2 or 3 degrees. People don't think about it, but like you're saying, with the canals being solar panels, it's not a drastic change as we would feel it. You know, we're still going to get hypothermia whether it's 60 degrees or 63 degrees, but that 3 or 4 degree temperature change is huge to a fish.
Oh, we're going, you know, people always say, you know, like with the climate change and how the weather's changing and stuff, because the earth goes through cycles. It went through a warming period, and during that warming period, the Vikings came across, conquered England, Iceland, Greenland, and set up camps in Canada and the northern part of the U.S. and Canada. I mean, people had towns and stuff here hundreds of years before Columbus. And then the earth went back into a mini ice age, and they lost all that ground. The Vikings couldn't get to their outposts, couldn't save the people. Everything froze over again, and those people starved in a lot of those places. But that was the original populations for Canada, Greenland, Iceland, England. I mean, all those were conquered by the Vikings.
Leif Erikson.
Yeah, the whole bit. So they went.
He gets credit for it anyway.
Yeah, well, that's cool. Way to go, Leif. I mean, kick Columbus's butt. All right.
Better than Leif Garrett.
Yeah. So Anyway, here, you know, the Earth is going through another cycle, whether humans are helping it or not. But nobody really listens when they talk about 1 or 2 degrees. But look at the difference between 33 and 34 degrees. Almost nothing. You wouldn't tell the difference at all. What's the difference between 32 and 33 degrees? That's huge.
Freeze.
Yeah, 1 degree more and that water's ice.
Yep.
33 and 34 or 34 and 35 doesn't really make any difference at all. But 32 to 33, dramatic. It doesn't make a difference until it does.
Yep.
And when you're talking about fish fermenting food in their belly, they got to do that. That 2 or 3 degrees, I guess, would make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, back to the point of this, that I'm going to have to say the problem that I'm running into here that I don't understand. Now, we've talked about in the summer, the cool, salty water comes in from the Gulf and revitalized everything. And in the wintertime, it's that outgoing tide drawing the warm waters from the creeks and all the rest of that stuff. But the water's cold coming down the rivers, and it's fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cloud cover, so there's no solar radiation going on. So on an outgoing tide now, you'd just be pulling fresh water.
Yeah.
Not warm fresh water, just cold fresh water.
Yeah.
This is where we go into the fishery report, because the only thing I can think of that's really going to respond well on the incoming tide, which is going to bring in ice cold salty water out of the Gulf. It's 60 degrees in the Gulf right now, I think.
Yeah, so, 60, 61 degrees. It's 63 in Tampa and 58 in Naples. Or no, 63 in Naples and 58 in Tampa.
So that we're puts 60. Us
right at 60.
So we got 60 degree water coming into the Gulf, cold salt water, which would help a little bit because we got 60 degree cold fresh water coming down the river.
So it might even be chillier than that, because that inland always stays a little cooler.
Yeah.
Look at how much of a frost you had the other day, and I didn't have a bit of it right here.
I didn't have any in my house, but Greg lives a couple blocks inland. You know, in my house, I have water on the front side of the house across the street, and then we have the canal behind the house.
Oh, that's
so
right. You got that little peninsula there that kind of blankets you.
Yeah, I'm on a peninsula, so we get that steam from the river coming up that kind
of a little bit of a thermocline.
Yeah. So I don't get the same frost as Greg does 2 blocks in. It's amazing. It's literally, yeah, 2 blocks inland. And
yeah, there's a bird flies. It can't be but 300 yards.
Maybe, yeah. So, but going back on here, there's 1,810 cubic feet of water a second coming down the river. And I was looking to see if we had any temperatures there. I don't see temperatures on there, so I'm going to go back. But anyway, so the reason we're going to segue into the fishing, because I don't know which tide would be better or worse.
Yeah.
There's no way. This is not like, you know, go out and fish the incoming tide is going to be better, or fish the outgoing tide is going to be better. We're going to suggest moving water, but really, I don't even know if that's going to help.
No.
I have no idea.
No, it's definitely confusing.
I've never been up against this before. So over the course of this week, I'm going to be doing more radio fishings, talking to captains, trying to figure out what the effect of the incoming and outgoing tide is having on the fish, and try and get a better understanding of this. It's called direct observation science. That's the only way we can do it, is to literally go out and do it, talk to people who are doing it, and find out which one's going to be the best. The whole point of all this last 24 minutes was, I don't know. I ain't got a clue. I can't figure it out. I don't know what to tell you. Boys and girls, this is absolutely, we're breaking into new territory. I have no idea where to go with this. So, well, I guess Peace River, as a fishing report would go, there was a lot of little redfish and a bunch of tarpon, but I don't know if any of them are hitting right now. You know?
Yeah.
So, okay, going past that. Now, I do know at Lashley Park, incoming tide, they have had some decent sea trout population.
Yeah. Yeah, most of them have been on the slightly smaller side, like right at that 15-inch to 13-inch range.
And
an occasional bigger one.
Well, the couple people that I've seen pictures from and stuff, they were looking at 20 to 24-inch trout got there. So I think it kind of matters how your luck's running. Roll the dice, but sea trout doing well. Now,
Eddie got a nice little tarpon down at the bridge this morning.
Really?
Yeah. He texted me a picture just before I came in. Looks like probably about a 20-pounder.
So the tarpon are pushing down the river with the current.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. The small, now we're not talking about 150, 200-pound tarpon,
no.
Although they are around. What we're talking about is the babies that live here all year. And once they hit around 4 feet, then they tend to leave with the adults. But 2-3 foot tarpon out in the Gulf of Mexico is lunch for everything that moves. So,
yeah, even your snook. You know, there's been a few snook being reported down there at the 41 bridge too. And I'm thinking that for as many as you're hearing about on miscellaneous evenings or mornings, I think half of those are river fish that have kind of moved down a little bit too.
Yeah, well, it might be a little uncomfortable. That's a lot of water flow.
Yeah.
Once it hits 10 feet, that's a lot of current to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless they can get back in a canal and get out of that major water flow, hanging out in the river is not fun when
right.
you've got an extra 10 feet of water a second coming at you.
Exactly.
So, 41 Bridge, fairly decent fishing right now. If I was going to do it, I'd be using a bobber, and it would be so long I couldn't cast it, though. I would be putting my bait about 4 to 5 feet below the bobber, trying to get down a little bit further in the water, but not all the way to the bottom. But I would say 4 to 5 feet. Like, put your bait on, put your bobber up there 4 or 5 feet up, and then just kind of drop it over and let the tide take, you know, open your bail, feed some line out, let your line drift away with the tide rather than trying to cast it where you want it. Because you can't cast 5 feet of line off with a bobber and all that, not with a 7-foot rod. So, leaving there, let's go over to Port Charlotte. What's going on in Port Charlotte?
Over by the beach complex and all those canals right in front of the beach complex, there's been trout starting to move into the canals themselves. A lot of sheep's head are starting to move into the mouths of the canals too. Those have been the two most consistent. There's been a few jacks here and there, oddball ladyfish, you know, but just fish that first, you know, probably 200 yards of each canal system, and just work it nice and slow is the key thing, because with that water temperature way it is, even the trout bite, it's still great, but they're a little bit lethargic on their bites. So just slow all your presentations down and you should be able to pick up some fish.
Now, going over to Maca, the cutoff usually does well in this cooler weather, but with this cloud cover, I don't know. I haven't heard anything about the cutoff. Rocky Creek, to me, would be a better bet. There are 2 or 3 deep holes in Rocky Creek that I think the fish would be hiding out in those deeper spots. Going back to one thing people always forget is freshwater, when it hits 32 degrees, it gets a coating of ice on it, and everything below the ice is 33, 35 degrees. But saltwater, if it's 32 degrees, that 32 degrees goes down 2-3 feet.
Yeah.
If it's 29 degrees, that goes down 2-3 feet. The air temp is the surface temp and the few feet right below that. So, in order for a fish,
saltwater freezes, I think, at like 28 degrees or something silly like that. I mean, it's 30.
Please leave that open.
Yes. 28 or 30 degrees. It's cool. It freezes at a much cooler temperature than freshwater.
It's got to be like 28 or 26. It's not like 30. It's below that.
Okay.
Because otherwise, we would have had ice on the harbor here a couple times. We've hit 28, 29 degrees.
Right. But you're right. I mean, the depth of the water that it goes down into the water column is significantly further than the freshwater.
So the fish have to be below 4 or 5 feet in order to maintain a milder temperature as the air temperature drops.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of what I was getting to, is once you're down 3 feet, you have a certain temperature, but you get down 4 to 5 feet, and that temperature is much different than at the surface. It's kind of like when I was swimming in the lake, you know, you'd be swimming and the water's nice and warm, and then you'd kind of go to float yourself and your feet would hit that cold water right below you, like down like 5 feet or something like that. That water was cold. I mean, you'd pull your feet back up, you know. And the same thing happens in the salt water, but it can happen the opposite way. The surface temps can be exceptionally cold, but you get down 4 or 5 feet and the water's actually a little warmer. So it's exactly the opposite of what used to happen when I was swimming freshwater lakes back up north. Now, Myakka River itself, there's some trout and stuff. What's Elgin Bean doing?
Elgin Bean's got some really nice sheep's head on it. It's been a little hit or miss. It doesn't seem to matter what the tide is. It's like hour by hour kind of thing. You know, guys are catching some fish up to like 20 inches off of the trestle there, and parked underneath the bridge fishing those pilings.
And
there's been some, the trout bite, you know, because trout usually aren't affected as much by the cold, but it seems as the afternoon progresses, the more consistent numbers and a little bit better quality of trout from like that 4 o'clock until about just after sunset, guys have been catching some fairly nice fish over there.
Any idea how they're fishing? Bottom, top?
Most of them are fishing on the bottom. If they're throwing lures, they're just throwing a small paddle tail or a curl tail with the little jig head on it, just working it super slow off the bottom. And then the other guys have been throwing shrimp, and they're doing like you were saying, they're setting their bobber at about 3 to 4 feet and just letting it drift out there and trying to keep it closer to the bottom of the water column.
Okay. Now, leaving there, going down the west side, I would say the west side of the harbor right now is probably the place I would be looking if I wanted to find a keeper redfish, because you're going to have your pockets of smaller redfish and all that stuff, but there's not the islands and stuff to contend with. You've pretty much got a wall of mangroves going down with a few creeks and stuff in it, but it's searchable.
Right.
You can kind of go along and find... Okay, I got small redfish here, keep going. Okay, I got a keeper, so I'm going to work this area and see if I can find another keeper-sized redfish, because the smaller ones will be bunched up and the bigger ones would be down a ways. But it's easier searching and hunting for them. Right. You're still going to put your trolling motor on as slow as it will go and just keep casting that trolling. Free line of shrimp up against the mangroves, spoons, lures, whatever you have, but just keep... You know, working. I mean, you want to cast every couple of feet, let it sit for just a few seconds, and slowly bring it in. Once it's out, then bring it up. But you've got to work that shoreline. You know, picture if you've ever seen a bass tournament, the guys going on casting, 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 until you find the fish.
Right. Well, and the other thing I like about the West Wall, too, is that the bycatch is a little bit better if you're willing to experiment and cast over towards the channel away from the shoreline and play
channel?
Around. The trough, I should say.
No, there's no trough over there. You're
when you confused. Cross when you cross the sandbar and it drops off just a little bit, the little bucket
the
there.
The flats.
Yeah.
It's just flat back there. The trough is gone, buddy.
Okay.
The trough is gone. There might be a partial trough there.
Where
I'm
going to
give you a partial trough. I'm not going to give you a whole trough. I'm sorry. There's no way I'm giving going in on a whole trough on this one.
Where everybody runs. How's that?
Yeah. Well.
Casting out in that more open area towards the harbor a little bit.
Better. There's better.
There's
yeah.
trout.
Okay.
There's been some pompano on an occasion, and then there's been an oddball flounder, too. So you just got to play around a little bit, and usually, you know, like you've shown me in the past, I don't mind throwing a pole out the back of the boat under a little popping cork with a shrimp on it or a little grub underneath it, and just let it drag behind the boat as we're kind of fan casting the bushes to kind of cover a little bit of other areas in the water.
Yeah, it's you know, one day Terry and I were fishing the west side, and I got the trolling motor going, and I'm up on the front, you know, I'm Jimmy Houston, I mean, I'm casting underneath the trees, and I'm doing this and doing that, and she's sitting in the back with a book, she's got a Coke there, having a smoke, she's got the rod over her shoulder, you know, just kind of holding it with her arm, kind of reading. And all of a sudden, the rod just bends like crazy. She goes, puts everything down, grabs the pole, reels in a redfish, you know, and then puts another shrimp on, tosses it back over there, sets it on her shoulder. She was catching 4-1 over what I was doing.
Gotta love it.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't think there's any way to win once you put a woman involved on this. Yeah.
Woman or a child?
Yeah.
You're done.
Yeah. I don't think it's possible to actually come out of that. And, you know, here I am. I'm up on the front, my best techniques. I'm skipping stuff underneath the mangroves. I got it all going on. I am fishing Frank. And she's just spanking me back there with a book.
You know? Gotta love it.
So, anyway, getting down around Cape Hayes, getting out on the sandbar. We've got some trout off of there, a few bonnet sharks, but there's not a lot. They're not enough to spend some time. Let's go into Turtle Bay. What's going on in Turtle Bay?
Turtle Bay, drift in the open flats there in that little bit deeper water and casting some of the sand holes and stuff and working your baits real slow is when you've been picking up some of your bigger trout. There's a lot of schooly trout in there, but some of those fish in that 20 to 24 inch range all stand down deep and real, you know, just got to work it real low and slow basically with your lures. You know, like you were talking about, like personally, if I'm going to throw a spoon back there, I love throwing a little weedless spoon because I can jig it or drag it right along the bottom across those sand holes. And if I want to add a little bit to it, I'll just throw a little tiny curl tail on the back of it to get a little bit more action or a little bit better profile.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and then along the shoreline, some of the guys have been getting a few redfish, but mostly some sheep's head more than anything else up along those bushes all the way back to the shack.
Now, speaking of that, going around into Bull Bay, I like fishing at this time of year. I like going back to a lot of those little islands and cuts and little stuff that's kind of between Bull and Turtle Bay proper. And just those whole back islands there. But over in Bull Bay, when you come through the main entrance coming from the south, going up in there, you got the fish shack on your left, and you go out. If you go about three quarters of the way across and then go to your left, there's a good deep body of water out there. I mean, it's 4 to 6 foot deep back there. And it's heading over towards the western side, towards Kaopalu. And you've got a really nice area there. I've caught monster ladyfish there, some of the biggest I've ever seen. I mean, 26, 28-inch ladyfish.
Wow.
We caught a couple one day that were over 30 inches. But a lot of trout and stuff through that area. It's...
Yeah, I've caught a lot of sheep's head and mangrove snapper in that trough, too.
Yeah. I mean, even before you get to the trough. I mean, it's been some pretty cool stuff over there. There's just been...
There should be a bunch of snook in there, but Danny was saying, because he was fishing over in that area, he said he didn't see any floating or stunned snook when he was out there on Monday, he was out, and he didn't see any stunned snook at all, but he didn't see any snook, period.
Really?
Now, last week, Carl and a regular customer and Bart were talking about all the snook that they were seeing right there in that trough on Cape Hayes, going between Muddy Bay and the entrance into Turtle Bay.
Right.
And the other gentleman saw a bunch of snook over there out in front, like around Kaopalau, going around the front side between that and Devilfish. He said he saw a bunch of snook there that same day. Danny said he didn't see any around, which is a little unusual.
Yeah,
but at least he didn't see any dead snook or stunned snook, because it was pretty chilly Monday.
Well... Getting up, and I would say if you were going to go out along the tailing flats, have you heard anything about that from Devilfish down towards Placida?
Yeah, the trout have been out there across that whole grass flat pretty consistently. Most of them are right there at that 15 to 18 inch range if you just drift across that entire flat, basically what's that, Widden Bay? You know, from the tailing flats, sandfly, all that stuff heading towards Placida.
Right.
That whole grass flat area has just been pretty much mostly trout. The couple little oyster bars that are heading in towards Widden Creek have been holding some nice sheep's head and a few mangrove snapper and an oddball incidental trout and redfish, but you're really working it. I guess there's been a lot of mullet boys over there looking for mullet and ladyfish working those flats and buzzing like crazy over there, so... The redfish have been a little on the leery side up in there.
Yeah, I would have to say that's probably very realistic. You know, mullet, it's going to be a big year. We're going to, the problem with the mullet fishing this year is they went out not on cue. They just kind of left a little bit here and a little bit there. And
very small trickles.
Yeah, but it was just kind of a flow of mullet out, not a big push of mullet. So all the little boats didn't get a chance to get in there and throw the cast nets and hit them with their little seines and all that other stuff and break up the schools and everything else. And so you've got these massive schools of mullet going out and getting together and spawning. Now, this is not fact, but this is what I understand is mullet get together in huge schools and then dive deep. And it's the water pressure that squeezes the eggs and the sperm out of the fish, and it mixes together as it rises to the surface because the eggs and the sperm float, and that's how they spawn. They don't, you know, like get next to each other and do it. They just all dive down together, and that everything mixes as it goes to the top. Well,
pretty interesting theory. I like it.
You know, explains why they go to deep water once
right.
a year.
Absolutely.
So anyway,
explains why they all come to the surface at the same time too.
So everything kind of goes along with that. But then you get the purse seine boats that hit them, and they'll have nets that are a mile to 5 miles long, and they just drop one end of it and then drive around a big circle, pick up the other end again, and then suck in the bottom and then crank the whole thing up. Yep. And everything in there is gone. So it's going to be a bad year to find mullet for the next couple years, because the purse seine boats, from what I hear, are in full force out there. There's going to be a real shortage on mullet. People see the little mullet boats inside, but they're actually breaking up the school, and it's not worth the effort of the purse seine boats, the gas, the labor, and all that, to go out and drive around and find little schools of mullet. They need big schools to make money. So, anyway, back onto that. Placida, what's going on in Placida?
The trestle itself has been doing really, really good. The sheep's head have been the dominating factor because they love the cold weather. And you said it a couple weeks ago, there's always that magic window with sheep's head where you get the few trickle in, then a few more trickle in, then all of a sudden you get a massive influx of them where they move in all over the place. And it lasts for anywhere from 2 weeks to 4 weeks, depending on food and temperature, all that good stuff. And we're like smack in the middle of that. We're running into about its third week, I'm guessing now, with how incredible it's been. We're hearing a fish. I mean, average fish is like 18 inches right now, and I've heard of a few 24 and 25 inch fish. And then also they're catching a few trout here and there off the trestle, oddball pompano, oddball bonnethead, and a few decent-sized bluefish. They're still snapper blues for New Jersey standards of bluefish, but, you know, a 3 to 4 pound bluefish is still a pretty darn good bluefish for our area.
Oh, yeah. You know, the one thing about Port Charlotte Canal is a lot of bluefish over here. Forgot to go into that. In the Manchester, the O'Hara, all that. Even in some of the spring lakes, we really heard about some bluefish. So the bluefish are up here in the harbor, actually pretty good. Getting up around Lemon Bay, what's going on in Lemon Bay?
Lemon Bay, the best reports I've been getting, because the weather's been so funky out there with the waves destroying everything. It's mainly been fishing the docks. A lot of those guys have been fishing the lee sides of the land and trying to fish little boat docks or property docks and getting some sheep's head and a few trout, which tells me the snook aren't underneath them if they're catching trout underneath them, and an oddball redfish. But it's mainly been sheep's head.
Some of the biggest sheephead in the area consistently come out of that area between Stump Pass and the bridge going on to Englewood on Beach Road, Tom Adams.
Right.
Those docks that line that shoreline, most of them, several of them have some deep water under them, and it's just perfect spawning habitat for the sheephead and big sheephead.
Yeah.
Getting around out along the beaches, it's been tough because of the wind.
Yeah. I guess the erosion out there along the entire beach has been pretty amazing. I actually I was telling the wife about it last night, that we need to take a ride out to Boca. Because I've heard a lot of different stories about all the erosion from Minnesota all the way down to past, you know, Captiva. So I'd be curious to see what that's going on, because nobody's really fished it, because it's been 3 to 5 footers breaking on the beaches.
Right. I mean, there's been some amazing wave action. Weather's not up on the drawbridge. I wonder what happened with that.
Their internet's probably down the way it's been going all morning.
Yeah. So anyway, but there's not a lot of reports out of the Gulf. With the cold temperatures, everything that I know about fish and fishing and everything tells me there's red groupers, snappers, hogfish, you name it, all on the very close reefs.
Yeah.
I mean, everything should be coming up close to shore. I mean, they should all be... I would be very surprised. If it wasn't for the fresh water, I'd be calling for good grouper fishing in most of the passes.
Yeah.
Like Captiva and Boca, Ponarasa.
Yeah.
But, don't know, because it's been too hard to get out there.
Too hard to get out there, and just nothing of an accurate report. Plus, it's questionable because of the fresh water, like you said.
Right. How's Pine Island Sound doing?
Pine Island Sound's incredible. Lots of big sheep's head in a lot of those deep sand holes, and you know, Pine Island's got so many of those weird mangrove bushes that have got 4 to 6 feet of water underneath them that guys are slaying some really, really nice sheep's head with a few trout, oddball redfish. Captiva Rocks has had a lot of sheep's head and some bigger trout, like some what I would consider gator trout, you know, anything over 5 pounds. You know, not tons of them, but enough worth mentioning.
Right. So, anyway, Pine Island Sound sounds good. We have any Ponarasa reports? I know there's a lot of trout off of Sanibel around the causeway.
Yeah, the causeway, I've heard just trout and sheep's head, but I really haven't had too many reports down there at all, unfortunately. It's kind of like the same way with Matt Lachey. I know they should be catching them really good there, but I personally haven't heard much.
The bridge at Matt Lachey should just be on fire with
should
big
be.
Sheephead.
I mean,
that Matt Lachey bridge holds a ton of big sheephead.
Yeah.
I mean, every year it's, you know.
Traditionally, it's one of the better ones around.
Yeah, and so I don't really know anything. Now, coming up Jug Creek Shoals, that's been pretty good.
That's been pretty consistent for a little bit of a variety of stuff. You know, there again, mostly sheep's head and trout, but there's been a few redfish, a few flounder, some pompano. Definitely been some bonnethead sharks around there. And there's been an inundation of lizardfish, too, down there from Jug Creek up to those big sand flats, Boquilla. All that area, I've had quite a few guys telling me how many lizard fish they've been catching, which is kind of neat. Different, you know.
Right.
They get irritated by them, but I think they're just, it's neat to catch different species.
Well, the thing about lizard fish is they make great bait.
Yeah.
Grouper love them.
Snook love them.
You can use them whole, live. You can use them as cut bait. People get too hung up on fish that they know. Ladyfish is a good bait. So they don't want to throw any cut bait but ladyfish. But
right.
Sometimes lizardfish will outfish it. Sometimes ladyfish will outfish the lizardfish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it goes along with people, they say, well, that's it's a fish. Other fish eat it. The way Mother Nature works is if it's smaller than you, you try to eat it. If it's bigger than you, it tries to eat you.
Right.
There really isn't a lot of in-between on that.
No.
And so, you know, I don't know. But east side of the harbor is a mixed weird bag. And if you think about trout fishing in Pirate Harbor, don't bother. It's a few small trout.
It's a good
trout.
Social gathering, though.
It's a great... If you want to go and be surrounded by a lot of other boats and go in there and, you know, be able to chit-chat back and forth between the other boats and stuff, yeah, go to Pirate Harbor, anchor up, and catch your one or two little tiny trout and, you know... Be part of the gang. Be part of the club. It's a big club. There's a lot of people in there.
Yes, there is.
But I would, if I was looking for trout, I'd be going up and down the outside of the bar. I would be dragging two things. Probably a Rapala X-Rap 8 in olive green pattern, you know, the OG, the silver green on one side, and a storm twitch on the other, or a rattle trap and a storm twitch, and I'd be trolling up and down the outside of the sandbar until I hit a trout, then I'd stop and fish.
Yeah.
But under no circumstances am I going to recommend or even consider the idea of going into Pirate Harbor to catch trout right now.
No.
It's... Everybody went there. Guys, if you were thinking about, wow, it's nice cold weather, I'll go down to Pirate Harbor, 800 other boats had the idea before you.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's there. That's not ever going to be the spot again, because the first day that people get there, they'll have a couple of good days. And then it's over, guys. Now, just north of Pirate Harbor, and I mean, when you come out to the channel marker, inside of the bar, just north of a quarter mile, an eighth of a mile, there's some fairly deep water right on the inside of the bar. You got 3 to 4 feet of water there, and the trout fishing isn't bad out there. Outside the bar, I would go trolling, and as soon as one of the rods went off, I would just shut down and fish, because there's fish there. But until you get a hit, it's going to be hard to tell.
No, I agree with that.
But I would troll and find the fish before I just anchored up and, you know, spent the day waiting to see if they were going to find me. You know, they're looking for food, you're looking for them. You know, just kind of idle up and down. Go between 2 and 3 miles an hour. And nice, even stops. And when you see a boat anchored up fishing, give them a couple hundred yards of berth and don't change the tempo of your motor. A motor idling by and idling away is not going to spook his fish. But a boat coming up, coming off plane, then firing back up, getting on plane, spooked his fish. Even if you're 200 yards away.
Yeah.
Consistent noise, like living next to an interstate. Here the cars come and here the cars go. And but you know what happened. But all of a sudden, what the heck was that? You know, it wakes you up out of a sleep because it's not the normal sound.
Not a normal sound, yeah.
So that's what you got to remember is keep your motor consistent, idle at a consistent speed. Don't get crazy on the, backing the throttle up and down. Don't change tempos. Pick a speed and stay there for a while. And then if you want to change it, you know, about every 10 minutes or, you know, I'll bump the throttle up a little bit or maybe decrease it a little bit to see if a faster speed or a slower speed is going to help me catch fish. But I watch my speed on my GPS and I know, okay, I started out 2 miles an hour pulling for 10 minutes, didn't hit anything. I'm going to bump up 2.5.
Right.
And then if I don't hit anything, I'm going to bump up 3. But I give it about 10 minutes at each RPM or each mile per hour range or whatever it is. So, anyway, east side of the harbor, there's some big redfish, but they're way back into the bushes. There's a lot of small redfish out in the front, but even those are becoming harder to find with the cooler weather. They're looking for deeper holes. You've got to find some troughs, holes, pitfalls. Yes, there are troughs there. I don't want to hear about it. Okay.
Not arguing.
But the trout, I'm going to call it better outside the bar right now.
I agree with that 100%.
So, anyway, Oh, PGI.
PGI. Ponce de Leon's getting some nice sheep's head, mangrove snapper, some decent black drum, and kind of an assortment of sizes on those from like that mid-20-inch range all the way up to like 40-pounders here and there. Been a few flounder on the rare occasion, but they've been popping up here and there. And then the jacks have been moving through pretty regularly right there in Ponce. Once you get up inside into the PGI canals, it's kind of been a little on the weird side. The snapper are doing okay, but the sheep's head have been definitely the dominating factor at the mouths of all of the canals.
And even back up, it's mouths and intersections that I find. What I'm looking for to fish there is a lot of water up inside of the canal system, and then where's it coming out? And I'll go up either the mouth of the canal or the first, second intersections to try and take advantage of that water flow. But it's if I can find where a big canal comes in head on and a big canal comes in from the left and then another canal comes in where all those are coming to one point, those are some of my favorite areas to fish because it seems like as the water gets pulled out, a lot of stuff gets pulled into that center section, that conjoining place.
Well, it makes a very turbid little spot as far as water goes because you got three spots where they're all kind of meeting and they kind of sometimes boil and create little eddies. So even though you got massive water movement going to it, sometimes that creates little pockets of calm where the fish can kind of sit and ambush as stuff's getting washed into it.
Exactly. So while the mouths of the canals are historically pretty good, you know, there tends to get quite a bit of boat traffic, quite a bit of pressure because it's easy to fish right there at the mouth of the canal. If you want to do something a little bit different, go up into the canal and look for these conjunction places where you would have a large volume of water coming in from the left and a large volume of water coming in from another area, and that's a great ambush spot.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Anyway, anything else we need to go over today?
Not really. Just watch the rough weather. Be safe.
Oh, yeah. Well, keep an eye up in the air. One eye on your line and one eye on the clouds and the weather. It can change at any time. And the neat thing about it today is the smartphones. Now, I don't happen to have a smartphone at the moment. I have a flip phone right now.
You went to the future and then right back to the past.
Yes. And it is the worst.
But I understand why.
It is the worst little phone I've ever had. It's horrible. But if you have a smartphone, make sure you have a weather app. I use Raindar, and you can use that to kind of tell where the storms are going so that you don't get trapped. And don't let the storms get between you and home base.
Right.
And other than that, I am Fish and Frank, by the way, boys and girls, and that is Robert in the chair across from me. Can you think of what we should end up the show with?
No, not really. As far as music goes or just in general?
Just in general.
Go out and catch some sheep's head. They're doing phenomenal right now. You only got a short period where it's going to be incredible, and then after this it'll be just like a slow, steady, but not incredible as far as quality and quantity.
Okay, and radio fishing is back. We will have weekly and quad-weekly and quin-weekly and bi-weekly. There'll be shows up every week.
And, a zillion of them.
Yeah, unfortunately. Like, I got nothing else but free time anyway. But everything should get back on track for 2016. Starting off with a fresh page. If you want to hear older episodes, just go and click on one of the buttons for 13, 14, or 15. In the meantime, this is Fish and Frank. And thank you guys for listening. We'll see you in the next Radio Fishing. Bye-bye.